The Sound of Hockey episode 255, we're calling this one the Mark Giordano episode. Why are we calling it that, John?
Well, Gio, as they referred to him.
Lovingly.
Yes. Was part of the initial Kraken inaugural season and the first captain in Seattle Kraken history and
Still, the only captain.
Yeah.
A captain.
And he celebrated a birthday when we're recording, not when you're listening to this.
Okay.
So he is with the Maple Leafs of Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And we love Gio. He was a great captain, rallied hard, I thought.
I think what you're missing there is that it's a pretty important birthday. It's birthday number 40, the big
40. Yeah, but that's not 255, is it?
It's not, but you know, it's a milestone. Big round number, so seems important. Anyway, it's Sound of Hockey. I'm Darren Brown, at Darren Fun Brown on the Twitter or the X, joined as always by John Barr. Hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I'm NHL 2 Seattle. On the X.
And we're also joined by Curtis Izaki. Hello, Curtis.
Hello, everyone. I'm Deep Sea Hockey on the
Twitter. How was your vacation, by the way?
My vacation?
Yeah, from the pod.
Being away from the pod. A lot of thoughts, a lot of commentary. We'll see how it comes out.
All right.
But I enjoyed it. Enjoyed the mailbag very much. Good times to be had there.
Over on the Patreon.
Yeah.
Nice little benefit for Patreon listeners. You know, it was kind of like a vacation from your problems, like in What About Bob, remember?
Exactly.
Yeah. We have a 5-star review to share. It is from everybody's favorite 5-star reviewer, The Fifth Scallop, back again.
Oh, man.
It says, how can you not love
babe's
this?
Back?
Yep. 5-star. Hey, babes. It's me, the Fifth Scallop, the most disliked listener of Sound of Hockey. Now, don't sell yourself short. I think there's people that are disliked way more than you're disliked, Fifth Scallop. And actually, I don't think you're disliked at all. I think that if you're a 5-star reviewer, you're an A+ in my book. You're 5 stars in my book is what you are. So I just wanted to update my 5-star review for the upcoming season of Kraken Hockey and give thanks to a fun group of guys who provide amazing coverage of the team we all love. While it may surprise you, I'm not a math guy, but that doesn't stop me from enjoying the analytics talk that John and quote unquote Chris bring to the
oh my
show.
Gosh. Here we go.
Yeah, this is catching
this
on
is
here.
This is a thing now.
Curtis. His name is actually Curtis. I will say that. They also do a great
allegedly
job of keeping the listeners up to date on what's going on with prospects in the Kraken system. And I'm no goalie, but I think Goalie Gear Corner is maybe my favorite segment because of how Darren sets it up. It cracks me up every single time. It would be a shame if that segment ever went away. Couldn't agree more. The four of you, parentheses, Stick Taps to Andy, have been a staple in my podcast listening for the last few years, and I appreciate every time a new episode shows up in my feed. Thank you, babes. You are the best.
Oh, that was a nice one.
Very nice.
Yeah.
That was very nice.
You never know what you're going to get from the Fifth Scout.
Yeah, I know. It keeps you on your toes for sure.
That was a very nice one. Thank you so much for that.
As much mollusk talk
as
normal.
That was officially our 300th rating also on Apple Podcasts.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Kind of fun. I've been trying to figure out where to send people. You know, at the end of the show, we say like Apple Podcasts.
Yes.
Spotify, Stitcher went out of business. Then last week we were like, oh, try out Google Podcasts. That seems to work. Google Podcasts is also going out of business apparently, or it's switching
out
to like
business.
YouTube Music or something.
Oh, okay.
So,
all right.
I don't know. If you have an Android,
you're screwed.
Just quit. I don't know.
I use Pocket Cast. We've
Pocket
been over
Cast.
This.
There you go.
But I don't have an Android.
It should be a pretty good episode today, though. We have one of my favorite player interviews that we've ever done on this one with Pierre-Édouard Bellemare, and it is it's a really, really fun interview coming up a little bit later, so I think y'all are going to enjoy that one. Stick around. We also have our Patreon starting lineup at left wing, Richard B., at center, Paul B. At right wing, Dustin P. At left defense, Jeff H. At right defense, Sarah S. And in goal, Joshua F.
Oh my gosh, that's so ridiculous.
Yeah. Every time
you
really
sell the goalie piece.
Well, the goalie always gets. I was actually, you know, Chet Buchanan, he does the announcements for the Kraken. And the other night, he announced Philip Grubauer in goal. And I swear he was holding the Gru part for like a good 10 seconds. You know, you got to really sell it on the goalie, and the goalie's the last one. So we are very excited to be here with you all. Let's talk Kraken news because I don't know about you guys, but I'm starting to get the itch. I'm starting to really feel hockey is almost back, and I'm starting to get like super excited about it. Now, I think when we got into training camp, I was like, I just don't know if I'm like really ready for all this. You know, it's a lot once it starts to hit. And now that we've been through preseason games and I'm like so hung up on who's going to make the team and who's going to be on the fourth line and who's going to be scratched and all this stuff. And now I'm just like, you know what? Give me this final roster. Give me the first game. Let's play real hockey. I'm very, very excited. How are you guys feeling about it?
I'm excited. I'm nervous. I'm not ready. Okay. I feel like I'm not organized. I didn't get all my yard work done before it goes dormant for the winter. All my chores are not done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Curtis?
Yeah. Same. There's always more articles to write, more data to compile. But, you know, the regular season has to come.
It's my data that I'm worried about. Yeah, probably more.
I knew what you were really worried about. Yeah. Yard work. Come on, John.
Yard work. Yeah. It'll take care of itself, right?
I'm just worried about people being on my lawn. And I want them to get off my lawn.
I know you are. So. Yeah. I'm sure it'll come up.
Anyway, so I'm very excited. We did have two preseason games here over the last week. They played against the Kraken, that is. They played against the Vancouver Canucks. They won 3-1. It was a relatively solid performance up and down the lineup. They had a very sloppy second period, but Jacob Melanson had a nice night that night. He was very feisty, I thought, very pesky, and I thought did everything he could to kind of get under the skin of the Canucks players. And I thought that that's kind of exactly what you want to see, I think, from like a junior player that's trying to make a name for himself. Although I guess he's now a Coachella Valley player, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I really liked what I saw from him. He scored a goal. Elie Tolvanen had two goals that night. And then Joey Decord stopped 7 of 7, while Philip Grubauer stopped 9 of 10. So up and down the lineup, I was pretty happy with what I saw from that one. Any additional thoughts?
No, just McCann, Beniers, and Everly weren't playing. Mm-hmm. And so, they've looked, in the games that they've played, they've looked like the best line, even though the Gord line still looks pretty good. I feel like Matty McCann and Everly have looked the strongest of the lines. And so they weren't even on the ice. Now, Vancouver probably didn't have their, I don't think.
They had some of their veterans in.
Pettersson wasn't playing.
No, Pettersson wasn't there. I don't know.
Yeah, but, you know, you never know how that kind of stacks up. But yeah, I was pretty happy about that performance.
Yeah. Over the course of the games, I mean, the Beniers line and the Gord line feel like they've given Coach Axtell every reason to think we should keep these lines together. You know, they both look pretty good when they've been out there. And in this one in particular, yeah, I thought the Beniers line looked great. Elie Tolvanen back with that Gord line scores 2. Hard to complain.
Yep. And then in the game against Edmonton, they lost 4-1 in this one. One of those was an empty net against. I didn't feel like I didn't come away from it feeling concerned at all, though. I thought they very much had the better of the play. They couldn't score very much against Jack Campbell, who oddly, maybe not oddly, but Jack Campbell played really well.
Yeah.
Coming off of a pretty bad year. So maybe he's due for a bounce back, which, man, if Edmonton gets goaltending this year, they're going to be a scary, scary team. I will say that because I think that's been a big problem for them. But, I mean, talking about the Kraken, I didn't come away from it feeling all that concerned. I thought defensively they looked really good. The only kind of, I guess, concerning-ish note was that it was a tough night for Philip Grubauer, who gave up 3 goals on, I think it was 13 shots. But, I mean, if you think about how that night went, and I can attest that as a goalie, this is a really tough night when you have just shots are few and far between. And one of those shots is Connor McDavid 5 feet away from you. You know, it's just like you're kind of set up for failure on nights like that when you just aren't getting much work. There was a stretch in the second period where he went like 15 minutes without seeing a shot, something crazy like
that. And the first shot he saw in that second period was McDavid's, like in a pretty good spot. And you've seen, and it went 5-hole, but you've seen McDavid score 5-hole shots like that all the time. And and like you said, I'm not too concerned in that the third goal against was essentially a power play goal. It was like after the power play expired, but Wright was not even in the zone when they scored in a pretty high danger spot. So I'm not terribly concerned, but I would like to see him have like a pretty good outing, right? I'd like to just see a better performance out of Grubauer before the season starts. Probably more for my own good, not necessarily. I don't know what he needs for his confidence, but you know, just an over 90 save percentage night would be fine.
Yeah.
So
Yep. Yeah, just a solid night where he looks like he's really in control. I thought, you know, against Vancouver, I thought he was fine, but still, it's only 10 shots, yeah. You know? So yeah. It's like, I don't know if this is enough work for him. So we shall see, but hopefully that's just a blip that he gave up 3 goals on 13 shots. But other things from this game, though, I think we saw some nice progress from the power play. Would you agree?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I think, you know, you published the article last week about how they might change it up. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of keen in on how they're changing it. And it was, keep in mind, McCann wasn't in the game.
He was against Edmonton.
Oh, he wasn't.
Yep. He was on the bumper spot. They had Beniers down low.
Right.
That unit was really good. They were moving the puck very well. Yeah. I was quite impressed.
And I thought Schwartz was also kind of in key spots, and he essentially had a goal, right? Mm-hmm. Yamamoto ended up getting it, but I thought they were moving around really well and moving it down low and kind of creating opportunities inside that I don't remember a lot last year. I mean, they did it, but not as much as they did, or didn't feel like as common as it was last night.
Yeah, everything last year to me got onto the perimeter, like just all the time, right? And the other thing, and when I was writing this story, I asked Haxtell about what kinds of things they can do to improve the power play, and he said that they need to start with the puck more. And now that's like the only thing that I can see is that they come out, they lose the faceoff right away, and then the puck gets dumped down, and then they can't get set up. And that has happened, and it happened against Edmonton on one of the power plays. There was one where it was like all of a sudden they're a minute 20 into the power play, and they've had nothing set
10
up.
10 seconds,
right?
Maybe.
And it starts with a lost faceoff. Like that's just how it starts, and then the ball starts rolling the wrong way and there's no fixing it. When they do have control of the puck, and now, I mean, these power plays that we saw on that night, they looked really creative, to your point, and we didn't see that a lot. And I think a big part of that is where they've now positioned Maddie and McCann. With Maddie down low, you know, there's a lot of different options that he has. He's a very shifty, creative player. And then McCann's dangerous, right? You put McCann right in the middle, attracting all that attention, and it does open up all these different slots. So I really, really like what they've done with changing up the personnel. Hopefully, you know, it adds for them this year, because I think that's an obvious need for improvement.
Well,
this
and
season.
They had Podorolski
on the second unit.
Yeah, and that's probably Bjorkstrand, I would think, or Gord, maybe.
I think you'd have Bjorkstrand.
Even Tolvanen.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I forget what they're going to do with their second unit, but
I think Bjorkstrand would slot in the Podorolski slot. But the one thing I'm wondering too is, okay, that's another kind of scheme that they have for the power play, and then they could always go back to the other one as teams start to counter.
Right.
So
the other unit that they had aside from, it's Justin Schultz, Andre Burakovsky, Jared McCann, Ellie Tolvanen, and Matty Beniers is one of the units that we saw at practice. The other one would be Vince Dunn, Alex Wennberg, Jaden Schwartz, Oliver Bjorkstrand, and Jordan Eberle.
Yeah. So those guys actually slot into different lines.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did like what I saw. Yamamoto stole a goal from Schwartz.
Third,
which was pretty funny.
Goal of the preseason and third power play goal.
Riker Evans did start that play with a very nice keep in at the blue line and then a no look pass to Podorolski.
We'll put a pin in that.
We might circle back on that. So, anything else that you wanted to touch on, Curtis,
going back to your point about starting the power play with the puck, there was one power play that started with 10 seconds left in the second period. Mm-hmm. There was that interference call on Andre Burakovsky. They had 10 seconds left. And, you know, I think I was watching the broadcast. And they said, you know, well, if you can win a faceoff here, you have plenty of time to set up a shot. And, you know, I was thinking back to last year. I was like, okay, well, they're not going to get anything. This is 10 seconds. But they don't have enough time to chase the puck down the ice and then get reset up. But Matty Beniers took the faceoff, won. Matty Beniers has been looking good on the faceoff dot so far. It's early. 2 games, but he's been looking good. And they got a chance out of it right there at the end of the second period in 10 seconds. So a little incremental progress to be encouraged about.
You do wonder if Matty, you know, you've pointed that out a couple times about his faceoff winning percentage in the preseason. You wonder if he, like, something a point of emphasis when he was training over this summer.
Yes, I think it was. And I think he said that because he was trying to get better with it.
He was not great in the faceoff circle last year.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I think he's at 58% or so on the preseason. Again, that's very early.
Yeah,
very
early.
And
it's largely indexed to the first game, right? Yeah,
so. Yes, but he's over 50% or is 50% at least in both games. You know, it's just something to put a pin in and watch.
I think you bring up a good point, and that's something I was even looking for in that game. It's just the faceoff circles in general, right? Not just the faceoff wins, but also the possession that, you know, we've talked about before. So yes, something to keep an eye on.
I'd like to get some pin clarification here, because the pin that you just put into the face-off situation for Matty Beniers, that's going to be a really big pin that stays there for weeks and months as we try to monitor.
So what should we replace
it with? Riker is the small pin, right?
Right. So we're going to come back to Riker in this episode. We're going to talk about him more. But the pin that you just put in Matty Beniers' face-off success for the season, that's got to be a really big pin. So you're asking, what should we... Maybe like a stake? Okay. Let's put a stake in that.
That's in the parking lot, maybe.
Okay.
That's in the,
we'll park it. Let's just park this.
Put it in the parking lot. Okay, well, I got to take the pin out first. I'll say one last thing about the
pin. Pin's been removed. I just wanted to be clear for the listeners. Pin has currently been removed from Matty Beniers' face-off success.
And the stake is on its way to me.
Okay.
So we'll put that in a second.
All right.
Do you guys know who the top two in time on ice in this this game against Edmonton was?
Ooh, I think I do.
Yeah.
One, Matt. Go ahead.
Matty and Riker.
Matty Beniers, Riker Evans, the first two draft picks in Seattle Kraken history.
That's right.
It's pretty cool. That's kind of how you dream it when you're a scout. It's obviously preseason game. It's a preseason game, but it's pretty cool that that could even be in any game that could happen. That's what the scouts imagine. Anyway, stake back in.
Stake has been driven into Matty Beniers' face-off success. So,
okay.
All right. Some other bits and bobs. Vince Dunn got sort of injured, like mysteriously. Nobody knows what happened. And that's one of the challenges of training camp, is that there's so many guys on the ice and they're split into multiple groups. And sometimes they have half the group on one sheet of ice and half the group on the other. And so I don't even know when he went missing.
He missed a practice that nobody picked up on.
I think he did too.
I was like, I don't remember seeing Vince yesterday.
Yeah. So anyway, it was spotted on Sunday that he wasn't there. Hackstall called it a maintenance day. And then he also wasn't there on Monday. And all of a sudden, people started to get a little worried. But then I saw him out there today, Tuesday. So he was just doing some individual drills. He didn't join the larger group. But the larger group was an optional skate today anyway of guys that didn't play on Monday. So it was just a kind of a weird practice day anyway, but he was just doing individual drills with Jay Leach. Thought he looked fine. Looked like he was moving pretty well. So I don't think it's anything to be concerned about.
All right. I'm not concerned based on that report.
The Kraken also started to make some cuts. They had a pretty big round of cuts. Ty Nelson was assigned back to the North Bay Battalion, as we kind of expected would happen. And then Jack LaFontaine, Jacob Melanson, Logan Morrison, Ville Ottaviinen, Tucker Robertson, Ryan Winterton were all sent to Coachella Valley camp. So no real surprise there. The only thing that I find a little bit surprising is that the next big round of cuts hasn't happened yet. So they still have a lot of guys in camp. It's got to be coming in the next few days here that they really trim it down a lot.
Yeah, I would think Thursday.
Okay.
But technically, they can wait till Monday.
They can. Meanwhile, down in the farm, Moo.
Return of my favorite segment. Yeah.
Is it?
Favorite sound.
Okay. Favorite sound effect for a segment.
Yeah.
Jagger Furkus was returned to the WHL not too long ago. He had the player of the week honors with 3 goals and 4 assists in 3 games with Moose Jaw. So he has hit the ice running, as they say.
One of the nastiest goals I've seen this year.
He scored from like a corner, right?
Literally the goal line.
Yeah.
And it snuck it past the goal. It was awesome.
An impossible angle, as some might say.
But magically, he scored from the impossible angle.
Yeah, so it's not impossible. That is the joke.
And named assistant captain.
Uh-huh.
Pretty cool. David Goyette was named captain of the Sudbury Wolves. So got some leadership in the junior ranks there.
How about that?
What about Ty Nelson? That? Any report on Ty Nelson?
We'll check out the old database on that one.
Okay, we want to talk a little bit.
Small pin.
Somebody in this room wrote a story on soundofhockey.com predicting, based on what we know now, what we've seen in training camp, what he thinks is going to be the final roster on opening night for the Kraken, assuming good health. So that means that we're kind of down to the last crew of guys that we think are still going to be around battling for the last couple of roster spots. The guys in question are Shane Wright, Cole Lind, John Hayden, Cale Fleury, and Jacob Megna. And in theory, for those 5 players, and this is if we assume that Pierre-Édouard Bellemare is on the roster, which I think he absolutely is, Kyler Yamamoto, I think he's on the roster, right? And then you have those five guys trying to find three roster spots. They can obviously keep two extra forwards and one defenseman, or they could do two extra defensemen and one extra forward, which they have done in the past, but I don't think that's generally the preference amongst NHL teams. I think usually they want to keep two extra forwards. But I will hang up and listen. Of those five players, who would you two gentlemen keep? Shane Wright, Cole Lind, John Hayden, Cale Fleury, Jacob Megna. Oh, and Devin Shore. I didn't include Devin Shore. Sorry. I don't want to lead the witness too much. And I know you,
you
both
already
have
did,
read my article.
I read the article. So,
objection overruled.
Let's see. I'm not as bullish on Riker as you are.
All right. Well, now you've spoiled my hot take here, but carry on. So you don't think Riker stays?
I don't think Riker stays, and you've kind of touched on it a little bit in the article about him just not playing, or potentially he would have to take a top six spot. He's a great candidate in a scenario where someone's injured. Now, I will say on Monday night, there were some defensive moments where I wasn't really stoked about Riker, and I feel like he got himself in trouble a couple times where he had somebody barreling down on him. One, there was a penalty. And then another, that there was a pretty good opportunity that somebody almost scored, or it was a pretty good opportunity. Those were the moments I remember, and I think of Hakstol's, like the other top six that are in probably projected to be in the lineup of the defense, relatively solid D, right? Not making those kind of mistakes. So that's what I'm not expecting him to make the team, because I feel like he's got some time. Now, you know, getting that exposure against NHLers probably gives him those reps and that confidence to kind of figure out how to deal with those situations. But last night it was more pronounced than I anticipated. So that's what I noticed last night about him. I'll shut up and listen for a while because it seems like I'm dominating the microphone right now. Go ahead.
No, I kind of felt the same way going into
that
Monday.
That he was dominating the microphone?
Yes. And so we need to, can we shut that off? Okay.
Mute him. Hold on. Okay. Go ahead, Curtis.
No, going into Monday night, I was pretty high on Riker Evans, and there were some good things on Monday night, but there were a couple just kind of those types of mental mistakes that I could see this coaching staff not liking. I mean, he took two minors, and I know the other play you're talking about. See, and there were minors he didn't need to take. They were kind of like
That's what I felt. He could have got out of it, and somehow he put himself in a tough situation.
Yeah, so I think skill-wise, he is, to my eyes at least, in this camp, seems unquestionably one of the six most talented defensemen on the team, as far as I'm concerned. But I also could envision a scenario where the coaching staff doesn't trust him enough to put him in a role where you'd want to keep him on the team if he's not getting regular playing time. So on that one, I'm not sure. Moving on to another borderline bubble player that was highlighted in your piece, Darren. Ty Cartier, I think, though, he's in a similar place to Riker Evans in the sense that he's waiver exempt. There are veterans who are not waiver exempt that are kind of, you know, above him in at least veteran status. But Ty Cartier he's performed so well this preseason. I just don't know how you can kind of look your team straight in the eye and say he doesn't belong as one of the 12 forwards to start the year. You know, that can change. There's still some games left. There's still camp left. But he seems like he's forced his way onto the team to me a little bit more than even Riker Evans has. Mm.
Well, see, that's just it. I thought that for Evans, and when I wrote the story, I knew that this was a hot take that I was making, and I called
hot
that out in the story.
Hacienda.
Yes. Hot take kitchen.
Hacienda. Yeah, yep. Sure.
I knew in this story that the H is silent. It's Hacienda. Hacienda.
Okay.
Yeah. I knew when I wrote this that this was a toasty take, un take caliente, that I thought that Riker Evans is going to make the team because there's a lot of things working against him. One of those things was they signed Brian Dumoulin over the offseason, which coming into it, I was like, all right, well, he's boxed out. There's nowhere to put Riker Evans, but he has impressed me every step of the way. And you're right, there are a couple of mistakes that weren't as glaring to me, but you're right, they were there the other night that you probably wouldn't see a veteran NHLer make, and you're right about that. But is he one of the six best players, and is he going to give your team a chance to win? I think he is, especially with the way that he can help on even on the power play. You know, now who does he replace on the power play? Does he replace Justin Schultz? That feels like a little bit of a stretch, right? Does he replace Justin Schultz even in the lineup? That also feels like a little bit of a stretch to me. But maybe there's a world where there's a rotation, right? With Justin Schultz comes out for a night, Will Borgen comes out for a night, maybe even Brian Dumoulin comes out for a night, because Evans has shown that he can play on both sides, right, in this camp. So I've just been generally impressed. I think he is one of the six best defensemen on the team. I don't think that they'll keep him if it means he's going to sit in the press box, though. So if they see him as the seventh defenseman, they'll send him down to give him time. He's the first one to call up. In terms of, do I think he deserves to make it? I do. As far as Cartier, yeah, I think he's solidified his spot. I don't think there's any sending him down at this point. So that brings us to the last roster spot, effectively. So now you still have Devin Shore, Shane Wright, Cole Lind, John Hayden, Cale Fleury, Jacob Megna. One of those guys gets the last spot. And I don't even think, when I was naming the players before, did I say Ty Cartier and Ryker Evans, or did I screw that up?
No, you just skipped over those guys.
Okay,
yeah.
So I screwed that up. But yeah, we're going to pretend that I did it right before.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I knew what your intent was.
Anyway, so of those players, now you have one roster spot left. Who do you give it to?
You know, I will say I kind of liked your Devin Shore projection.
Okay.
I don't think Hayden has looked very good, where Devin Shore actually looks like a pretty decent NHL player, and I think he could stick with the team. And so that means Cole Lynn is put on waivers with the intent to assign to Coachella. I don't even know if he'll get claimed. And then defensively, Megna or Fleury, and it seems like Megna's got a lot of playing time, but I think Fleury's looked better at times. Almost scored a goal, too, on Monday night.
Fleury has looked really good in this camp. I think he's much improved. I think he looks stronger and faster and calmer with the puck. And I don't know. I mean, does he end up as your seventh defenseman again? Like, if I'm wrong on the Ryker Evans projection, does he again wind up as your seventh defenseman? I'm almost rooting on them. If it comes down to the two of, if I am totally wrong about Evans and it comes down to Megna against Fleury, I almost hope that they'll put Fleury down just so that he can have a chance to play. You know, don't sit in the press box. Let Megna sit in the press box. That's fine. And Fleury could get claimed because there's a reason that they didn't expose him to waivers all last season.
But how does he get claimed when nobody's seen him in a year, right?
Yeah, I don't know. But he's a good young right shot defenseman with upside.
Yeah, I mean, I know.
That's just been boxed out, you know?
You know, I don't know for sure, but it just seems like I just would like to see him play for his sake, you know? More than anything.
CJ Mapes on Twitter had a really good rebuttal here. He just said, would like to see Fleury remain on the team. A young right-handed defenseman who is improving is worth it. And keep Cartier and Hayden to fill out the forward group. There's a lot of grit and determination with those two. We will eventually have Evans and Wright up here this year. Which I thought was a very good level-headed rebuttal to my story.
Yeah,
so.
I think that's kind of my take as well.
Yeah.
And one thing I'll say.
You think Shore over Hayden, though. Right.
Yeah. I mean, but they're interchangeable.
Yeah.
You know, they're 14th forward on the team. I will say Cartier is, like you guys have pointed out, that, you know, as long as he's playing, and I think he's made a case, not just that he's on this team, but he's in the lineup.
Yeah.
And so then it becomes like, you know, maybe he's the Ryan Donato / Daniel Sprong, and Yamamoto's in the same boat and they're kind of rotating through. Because it's tricky, because I think Yamamoto's looked pretty good at times too.
Yeah, and so, I think Yamamoto deserves to be here. I think he deserves to be in the lineup. So
yeah.
It is tricky, right? And when I was going through this exercise, I had initially written the story to be like, I don't want to decide who the last guy is, so I'm just going to have the readers decide. And then I was like, no, that's too much of a cop-out. I'm going to pick somebody. And it was really hard for me to make that decision. So
yeah.
I don't think that this is an easy call for them. The good thing is, if they get into the season, it's a very good thing, right? It's a very good problem to have. They have almost too many NHL forwards or NHL caliber forwards, and also too many NHL caliber defensemen that would easily make NHL rosters around the league,
well,
in my opinion.
Yeah. And how I've been thinking about it is, if you think of like their 12 forwards, if you're counting Tanev, Pierre-Edward Belmar, and Kyler Yamamoto as a, you know, just as like kind of the fourth group.
Yeah.
And then there's six defensemen. After that, it seems to me like, just talent-wise, the next three that you would be interested to have on the team are Evans, Cartier, and Wright, which are all guys where it's like, but you can see the flip side of it. It's like, you don't want them to just sit.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're waiver exempt. And we think Wright can go to the AHL. So it's like there's an argument to put them down. So that's what makes it all like, kind of, how do you balance that? Like, who has kind of forced their hand enough to stick on the team? I think Cartier has. And one of the reasons why Cartier over Evans, in my mind, has, is that Cartier is so versatile in the way that he can play. Like, there have been a couple different variations of the fourth line kind of floating around at camp. One has been, that we've seen, has been Brandon Tanev, Pierre Edward Belmar, and Ty Cartier. And you could imagine Cartier on that lineup kind of being the Daniel Sprong or Ryan Donato, who's like kind of the goal scorer on that line, but can play the physical style and defensive style that the other two do as well. But you could also imagine Ty Cartier on a more, you know, a version of the fourth line that's a little bit more familiar to what Kraken fans have seen so far, which is a more kind of offensive fourth line, like what we had, what the Kraken had last year with Ryan Donato, Morgan Geeky, and Daniel Sprong. You know, you could imagine a version of it where it's Ty Cartier, Shane Wright, Kyler Yamamoto. Mm. He fits just as well on that line. He can play a skilled style.
He also can fill in up the lineup, as we saw in the playoffs last year.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's got that
like Daniel Sprong. So theoretically,
well, Daniel Sprong up though. They almost never did it.
Got some power play time.
That's true.
So I think he's forced the hand. And then after that, I really like how Cale Fleury's looked. I think Devin Shore is a good prediction. I don't think any of the forwards have really pushed the envelope there.
Other than Cartier. Cartier has said, like, this is my spot. I'm taking it.
Yeah, none of John Hayden, Cole Lind, Devin Shore have really stood out.
I agree with you.
Devin Shore looked
solid.
Pretty good.
Yeah,
so that's why I think it's a good.
And I think he's a quintessential extra forward, right? Yeah. Like, and he can take face offs.
And he's left-handed.
Needed. Yeah.
They need more left-handed centers.
That's correct. Yes, exactly. Great closeout.
One thing we didn't talk about.
To that conversation. Yes, sir.
Goaltending.
Uh-huh.
Seem to think it's Joey Deese.
I still think it's Joey. I have had pause here over the last few days because they've switched what the pairings are, and I totally like read way too much into who's skating with whomst in practices. And so they had, for the longest time, they had Drieger and Stezka together and Decord and Grubauer together. They switched that the last few days, and Drieger has been with Grubauer. Now, Grubauer played the whole game on Monday, and Drieger just sat on the bench. So maybe I am reading too much into that. But then again, today they were like doing work together. So that's the only thing that's making me like hedge my bet a little bit. But I still think it's Joey's job to lose. Just when you think about the body of work here over the last, 7 months, I think camp, he's been very solid. He hasn't given up a goal in his preseason appearances, although by the time you hear this, maybe he will have. And, you know, I like where he's heading. So that's my pick.
You know, we'll get to it in a bit, but Tampa Bay might be looking for a goalie on the waiver wire. So I think if Joey goes down, he gets claimed. Drieger is a little more challenging just because of the salary aspect of it. It's a little higher salary. So that's something to keep in mind.
So it's harder to claim him. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. There's less teams that will feel the need to claim him, and Tampa Bay being a little kind of pinched too. So.
I don't know that Tampa even really could. I mean, I'm sure they could do something to claim him, but it'd be hard for them to claim him. There's no upside in this for me at all because I'm just switching a take here. But I've kind of come over to the Joey Decord. It's the backup camp. So,
interesting.
You were the Drieger.
I was in the Drieger camp, and I've come over. So,
Well, welcome.
Squarely been.
Yeah.
The campfire is roaring.
Yeah.
Here, come make us more. Let's get to our fantastic, very energetic, very interesting interview with Pierre-Edouard Belmar. We now welcome on to Sound of Hockey another very special guest. He is new to the Kraken, but he's got a lot of NHL experience under his belt. He's played with the Flyers, the Golden Knights, the Avalanche, and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Welcome to the show, Pierre-Edouard Belmar, or Belly.
Thanks for having me. Thanks.
Prefers to be called. We're very happy to have you. We were just talking about this a moment ago, but do you feel like you kind of jinxed it? And I hate to talk about the weather as part of our podcast interview here, but... do you feel like you jinxed it a little bit the other day with your opening press conference?
No. It was just one day of rain so far, to be honest. Like, it was fun to show the kids. That's what we talk about pretty much.
That's right. Yeah.
So it was, and we were outside with the kids under the rain, so it was not a big deal.
Okay, well, I'm glad you enjoyed that. There is plenty more on the way here during the season. You spent a little time in Seattle now. Obviously, you got to experience the good weather a little bit. I'm just curious what your take has been on it so far.
Pretty amazed, to be honest. Like, because... like we talked in the first question, you know, about the rain. That's all people talked about.
Yeah.
I had no idea about how, first of all, Scandinavian it is.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, I mean, I live in Sweden every summer, and where, like, you hear, like, the mountain, the water, the lakes, it looks really similar to where I live in the summer. So, but with the better weather, we've been on the beach, like, we've been, like, enjoying our time. So So far, it's been pretty amazing, to be honest.
Yeah, I think I have a theory that Seattleites actually want people to not know that it's actually a pretty great place. And so,
secluded.
Right. In a way. We just talk a lot about how much it rains, but there is actually this period of the year that it doesn't rain at all. So, another thing, so you have connections with a couple of guys on the team. I know you work out during the summer with Adam Larson. Obviously, go way back with Burakovsky. We had Larson on the show the other day. He was talking a lot of trash. Do you have anything that you wanted to say back to him?
No. I mean, he's the same as usual. You know, he comes home. He comes to the rink with the clothes you've never seen before. He must be owned by his grandpa or something like that. So, no trash talk. Just, you know, the good old Larson.
Yeah. No, he actually, I'm lying to you. He actually said, I have nothing bad to say about that
guy.
No,
I mean, you have to understand that, like, I started, so that was 2009, I think, in Sweden, in that team. And Lars came as a 16-year-old kid.
Wow.
Right? And he was, like, fresh, young, and all of it. And then from that point, we've worked every summer together. And it's been, like, for a big amount of the time, I was, you know, one of the top guys and, like, physically on top. And, like, you know, he was one of the guys that was striving to be better. So challenged us, the older guy, to be better. And now that he's, like, surpassed me physically, I'm one of the guys that stays behind him in the summer and try to, you know, to keep up with him. Because cool. Then it's pulling me the right way, right? So our relationship is pretty awesome. And obviously the fact that we play together, I mean, we've had some fun talk and we were kind of hoping about it during the summer. So I love the guy, and I mean, he's a Swedish guy, you know, it's really easy to live.
You actually played with Bud Holloway, right?
I did.
Yeah, because he was a Seattle Thunderbird.
Yeah,
played in that same arena for a while. But
great guy, too.
Yeah, he was awesome out here, as you might imagine. So, anyway. So, this might go terribly bad, but...
Go ahead.
I'm told to ask you, do you happen to know what time it is?
That's somebody in Tampa to ask you that, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. That's a little ritual I had.
Jason Berger,
also
was equipment guy for Seattle Thunderbirds.
He
closed the Key Arena, the building that you play in, before it got essentially redeveloped and the Thunderbirds moved down to.
Okay.
So anyway, he's a good buddy.
I've had a pretty good relationship with those guys.
Yeah.
I've spent a lot of time at the rink, right? So I end up to spend time with them more than with the hockey players.
So we love to talk about players' journeys, especially because we have the juniors around here.
Yeah, mine is a little odd.
Yeah, a little interesting. So you would play in you're from France, played at elite level in France.
Yeah.
And then at 20 years old, you went over to Sweden.
21,
and played.
Yeah.
What were the difference between those leagues at the time? Because you were playing playing adult or
I was playing
men's
pro.
League?
Yeah, I was pro. I played 4 years of pro, won the cup twice in France. Like, you know, so I had like big minutes, big everything. And then it's not that France didn't have anything to teach me anymore, but I wanted to learn more, right?
Yeah.
And at that time in the country, nobody had ever signed in Sweden a long term. So it was kind of a good challenge, and the team came and said that they were interested. And when I got to Sweden, the biggest difference was like, okay, that's a job, right? We were practicing twice a day in the summer.
Okay.
You were getting paid during the summer to work out. I was like, this is amazing. I'm getting paid to go in a gym. Easy life, right? And then I also like, you know, got, this was the start of like, I was a top player in France, right? Like, all the credits, you know, like, in a newspaper, like, youngster, like, you know, national team, everything was great. Won the cup, right? So everything was kind of as good as it could be. And a bit cocky, because when I got to Sweden, it was like, well, you know what? I'm just going to try to be in the top team in the bottom league, in the second league, or bottom team in the top league, and I'm going to play a lot. And I get into that, you know, top team in the second league, and I'm signing a tryout contract to be 13th forward. You know, like, this is like back to reality.
It was like, a little bit of humbling.
And it was like, and this was the start of a journey, right? Like, it was like, oh, like, I don't understand. Those guys are all better than me, much more physical than I am. And it was like, okay, just learn the culture, learn the language. Show those guys that they are like spoiled brats, because like they come, that's what they've had. I've had one practice until I was 11 years old,
right?
You know, like every week that was it. So then the ice was, there was like 4 hours of ice. I was like, okay, I'm gonna enjoy, be there as much as I can. I have nobody at home, I'm living by
myself, right?
So I'm just gonna be at the rink as much as I can. Yeah. And then suddenly that became kind of an identity that everybody talked to me about, like, oh, he's the guy that is at the rink all the time and doing extras. And I was not doing it for like the praise, I was just doing it because I needed it
to
back to those guys.
Yeah.
And before you know it, like, I little bit grab the steps and become like a top guy in that team. And then I got to the second team in Sweden 3 years later. And at that time, I just won the league in score and goals, right? So I'm like, not cocky, but like, I'm expecting to play. Got to that top team, boom, fourth line again. Like, get like 6 minutes out of time. And this was kind of like the thing, all right, you know what? I've done it before.
Right, right.
Like, you know, let's do it again. Right? Let's just work. Let's be happy about your role. Learn to PK, learn to block shots, and then eventually start getting more ice time because like, I do the right stuff on the ice and I play reliable. And then before you know it, like, the dream was never to come to the NHL. And it was like, at 29, I buy my house, and then 2 months later, hey, there's a contract for you in the NHL. I'm like, what?
So we talked to Derek Ryan before. Mm-hmm. He had not he was little, path, yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but yeah, like, yeah. There's some parallels there. Yeah. But when he came to North America, he went. He took a pay cut to play an AHL contract in Carolina.
Yeah.
Like, was there ever a doubt that you might play in the AHL?
No, doubt is a tough word to say, because like to be honest. In my one of the biggest thing in my journey is like when coaches been telling me or GMs or organization tell me like if you do this and this it will work for you, and I have a pretty kind of a military discipline, so I did those things they asked me and then it worked out. So when I got to the Flyers, the big reason why I took the Flyers compared to Montreal, which was in the mix, is that like they were telling me we have five things that we need from you, and if you do those five things, you will play.
Uh-huh.
And by the time I came to camp, that's all I was ready to do. Like, I didn't care about anything else than those five things they asked me. Drive hard on it, be a fast center for the fourth line, kill some on it, plug some shots, like, you know, be loud. That's all I did. And then before you know it, I had a spot. So it never crossed my mind. I didn't tell my wife, hey, don't come before October because I'm not going to make the team. It was just like, let's see what happened.
Yeah. Right. Wow. Amazing.
And it's so interesting that you finally joined the NHL as a 29-year-old, effectively a rookie, right? Like, what's
and
that emotion like?
I think that helped.
Like?
I think that helped.
Because you're attached at that point, right? Like, I mean, but what is the emotion like when you make that NHL debut finally?
It was kind of a weird mix because I'm already older than half these guys.
Yeah.
But it's my first game, right?
Right.
And I've already played like... I played 13 years in Europe and only playoff time, right?
Right.
Some of the guys never played playoff.
Uh-huh.
So, like, I'm supposed to kind of be quiet in the locker room, but I have a big mouth. So, like, right away was kind of like, you know, like kind of a weird feeling, like, shh, don't say anything. But on the first game, the biggest thing was, like, the kind of, like, general respect that I got from every single person of the organization that came to me, either shake my hand, give me a hug, letting me know, like, this is an achievement. This is not everybody that can play in this league. I was 29 years old. Like,
right,
you know,
right.
I've worked my whole life for it, but not for that.
Right.
Never worked for the NHL. But
right.
But I'm here now, and everybody's coming in, like, you know, tapping the shoulder. Good job, man. Like, you deserve it. It was kind of, it warms
that's
your heart.
Awesome.
That was a pretty good feeling about it.
I love that. We're going to ask you just one more, because I know we have some time constraints. I hope we can talk to you again, though, in the future, because this has been really fun. I think we could talk to you all day. So, here's a kind of an off the wall one for you. But I got to visit Paris this summer.
Yeah.
And it's only a little off the wall.
Where is this going?
Yeah.
I think
for some stories, just so you know.
I do have one. I'll tell you sometime.
Off the mic.
Yeah. The perception from Americans who go to visit Paris is that a lot of times Parisians or French in general can be like harsh on Americans, right? Like they're
arrogant.
Not necessarily arrogant, but just like not that welcoming towards Americans specifically, right?
Yeah.
And I found the complete opposite. I thought people were like over the top welcoming.
You went into a nice neighborhood.
Oh, is that what it was?
No.
I was wondering if there's been like a shift in...
No, it's never... I think the shift is because, you know, with all those social medias and internet and everything in the last 10, 15 years, like the young generation are now in their 30s and have a better knowledge of understanding English.
Okay.
Which, like, back in the days, my parents, right, like, if they were bad in English at school, they could, like, you know, balance it with being really good in sports. So why would you lose time learning English when you could, like, balance it with a sport, right?
Yeah.
So, like, the understanding was so bad that you then end up being, like, almost ashamed because you can't the language, and then you seem arrogant, which makes them seem harshness, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the change now. Like, the industry has changed, the world has changed, and you need English. So now I think more and more people talk English, and they're okay. Like, now they're okay. If they don't know English, it's gonna be okay now compared to, like, you know, my parents' generation. If they didn't know English, they almost were ashamed, and then I would have this like harsh front to them, right?
Yeah.
So
that's really
you're in a great
that's a very thoughtful answer.
Yeah, right? Yeah, very thoughtful. Yeah, that's really interesting. Well, we had a great time, and
it's
and
a good
I love
city.
Your city.
It's
so,
a great city. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't live there.
Right.
I have an issue with traffic.
Okay.
And I
plenty
I,
of that.
Yeah. But I live like, you know, for so long in Sweden, the quality of life is so high that it's more about, like, I don't care about being a big city or what there is in the city. If I have my family and if I can enjoy life, I don't care if I'm in a cabin, as long as, it's, you know, I have good neighbors around me, and that's all I really need, right? So that's why I couldn't live there.
Right.
But the food culture is dynamite.
Oh, yeah, man, and I miss sure it every day. I've got food questions. We'll table that for part two down the road, but
I'll be there.
I want to talk about some food. Yeah.
Awesome. So, all right. Well, Belly, thank you very, very much for doing this. Welcome to Seattle.
Thank you.
Best of luck this
season. Thanks for having me. Yeah. Cheers.
All right. Thank you again to Pierre-Edouard Bellemare.
Some life lessons in there, too.
There are.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, some interesting takes and perspectives that he gives, and love that.
Some profound stuff. We had a lot more questions lined up to ask him and only got through a few because he is a very talkative and thoughtful man, and man, I enjoyed that so much. So
I want to hear what Adam Larson has to say about sweaters. That's that's where I am.
I kind of set Bellemare up there because, well, I totally did
him dirty.
I kind of did him dirty, yeah. But anyway, good stuff. Thank you to the Kraken for letting us talk to him. That was a fun one, and I hope we can do it again relatively soon because I think we could have gone a lot longer with him. So
yep.
Let's talk some NHL headlines around the horn of the NHL or something.
Oh my God.
ESPN will reportedly have a Frozen Frenzy, which will be similar to Red Zone. I think in theory, this sounds incredible. I'm really excited about this. I do enjoy Red Zone when watching NFL football. It will be on the night when all 32 teams play, which I think is in October. It's the night when Seattle plays in Detroit. I think it's like the 22nd or something like that. It's that night when Seattle's in Detroit. So they're going to have that. They're going to be showing every hit, power play, and goal, I think, is how they're planning to do it.
That sounds insane.
Well, so have you ever watched Red Zone?
Not in many years, right? But yeah, I know how it works.
So I think what they'll do is they'll probably have a little bit of a time shift when goals are scored, but I bet they'll cut in live every time there's a power play. And so if there's three power plays happening at once, they'll have...
That's what I was thinking.
Boxes.
The only like Red Zone equivalent is like you can't cut in during a breakaway. It's like, oh no.
Correct. So it's I'm thinking it'll be a little bit different because there's not like the field position aspect of hockey, right? There is the power play aspect, which will be interesting.
So you'll probably see 3 to 4 Edmonton power play goals that night. That's my guess.
That is one thing. If I'm just watching power plays for like hours on end, I might get sick of that. But
yeah, but I'm curious to see it. It's a cool idea. I'd love it if it's good.
John Buchergras will be the host of that. Other NHL headlines, we had some signings. Trevor Zegras is finally in the fold with the Anaheim Ducks after not holding out, but he was not signed, so he's missed all of training camp up to this point. 3 years, $5.75 million AAV.
What's your take there, Curtis? Contract corner with Curtis?
Don't bridge your young superstars. I mean, that seems like kind of an easy one. I mean, the new management does seem like kind of genuinely like they want to see him prove it before they give him a big deal, but
yeah, he didn't have a great year statistically last year.
No, but I mean, I think we're worth the Kraken. I mean, we're talking about Matty Beniers hasn't risen to a point per game player, but we're talking about 8 years for him. So I think there's a lot
we're talking. We don't know if they're talking about
no,
it.
No, we are talking. Yeah, obviously, if 8 years were out there, maybe Matty Beniers would be signed already, but. Yeah, I don't love it for them. I mean, the Elias Pettersson situation is with Vancouver is, you know, another variation on this. I mean, he signed for 3 years and now he's coming up after this season, I think. Mm. And so that's going to be a big deal for Vancouver. Can they even keep him after that? So. Yeah.
Another signing extension with Michael Backlund and the Flames, 2 years, $4.5 million a year. They also named him captain. Was that part of the deal? They're like, hey, if you sign, we'll name
maybe,
you captain.
Maybe.
And then the Wild signed Matt Zuccarello for 2 years, $4.124 million, and Marcus Foligno for 4 years, $4 million. I was talking to a Wild fan friend, and he wasn't thrilled about this because it seemed to be like just locking up a lot more cap space that
Is
they
the
don't
Wild
really have.
Wild fan
so.
Friend to you?
No, I actually know another one. So,
okay.
Yeah, but also
Foligno seems a little high, doesn't it?
Well, he's like the heart and soul of their team, so I kind of get it. But 4 years, it didn't seem necessary to me at this point. Like maybe get through the season and then see. I don't know what the point of that was, but whatever.
Okay.
Billy Guerin likes him. So some injuries. We just alluded to Andrei Vasilevskiy being out. So he's got, it sounds like, 2 months after he had back surgery. So that's a big deal. Friend of the pod, the former white whale, Dylan Gambrell, sustained a concussion, and he's out for the foreseeable future. So that's concerning. And Alex Killorn fractured his finger and will be out 4 to 6 weeks. Isn't he on Anaheim now? Is that right?
Okay. Yeah.
So he'll be out 4 to 6 weeks. And those are our NHL headlines around the horn of the NHL or whatever.
You need to come up with a better
around the boards. We should call it around the boards.
Yeah, right? Around the boards sounds better. Yeah.
Let's move on to our segments, and our first segment is everyone's favorite segment, especially the fifth scallop.
We need to check the text of that review.
It's goalie gear corner. Curtis, I'm curious. I know that you've kind of converted into liking Goalie Gear Corner, but when you hear me start to say what segment it is and I say that it's everyone's favorite segment, are you now jumping on this bandwagon of being like, no, it's totally not?
No, just amused. Okay. I enjoy it.
You're just playing into it. Linus Allmark has a new setup to commemorate the Bruins' 100th anniversary. It goes along nicely with their uniforms. Maybe I should hand this one over to you, Curtis, to take us through.
So I'm looking at it. This is my first time putting eyes on it.
Is that right? You haven't seen it yet.
It should tell you something.
Okay.
I don't know. My reaction is a little bit along the lines of, I understand the vibe they're going for, the brown throwback, but do we need it? Do we want it? I don't know. These are questions we should be asking.
Do we ever need it or want it when it comes to the brown throwback? Anything in hockey. I think sometimes yes, sometimes no. In this scenario, for some reason, I kind of think it works. It's a very dark, almost mahogany brown. They're Bauer pads with the digiprint where it's got, like, you can do very nice images on these. And they do look pretty clean, I think. It'll look kind of weird with, like, brown against black, but I think it kind of works pretty well. They do also have little Bruins 100-year logos at the top, which I think is a nice touch.
Yeah, yeah, they're pretty clean. I will say somehow with the look, they look a little smaller. I feel like white pads look bigger.
White pads do look more intimidating. That's the theory. So allegedly, when goalies wear dark pads, players can see more holes without having to, like, look. Right? Because, you know, you just kind of take a quick glance at the net. You can see right where the holes are if the goalie's wearing dark pads. That's why most goalies shifted to white pads for so long. But recently there's been kind of a shift back. So.
I'm looking at this picture and I feel like I could definitely not score on Linus Allmark.
he is an okay goalie. He does have a pretty cool mask to go with it, which features, I don't know, some classic goal or something that the Bruins scored, but I don't care. We now move on to our weekly one-timers. Our first weekly one-timer, Derek Stepan has announced his retirement after 13 NHL seasons. I've been a big Derek Stepan fan. He was a Wisconsin Badger when I was a Wisconsin Badger. He's hails from Hastings, Minnesota, which is just down the road from my hometown. And also, he was the captain of Team USA when they won gold in the World Juniors.
Oh, look at that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked Stepan. I thought he was peak of his powers, I remember, with him really with the Rangers. Mm-hmm. I affiliated him with the Rangers team,
he was on the one that went to the conference finals.
Yeah, so time in Arizona was a little lackluster, probably because I wasn't even watching the Coyotes. Mm-hmm. So,
our next weekly one-timer, Cole Iserman decommits from the University of Minnesota. He's headed instead to Boston University. Macklin Celebrini is there now. Curtis, you've been keeping tabs on this Boston University, Boston College scenario happening here. What's the deal?
Yeah, it's a pretty good arms race. It's a little hard in terms of college hockey because you never know how long these players are going to stay. You know, they might stay for only 1 year, and then that super team over 2 years that you think might assemble never actually really comes to be. But Boston College is getting a full, like, the top line from the program. Mm-hmm. Is just going program. To, from the program, just going to Boston College this year. That's Will Smith, Ryan Leonard, and Gabe Perreault. Mm-hmm. And then they're also getting Michael Higgins next year, who's a potential number one overall pick. That's 2 years out. He's going to be competing with Michael Mesa probably. And then, yeah, BU getting Cole Iserman has a number of other top.
So how about let's set some context who Cole Iserman is?
Yeah, okay. So Cole Iserman, another, where did Cole Iserman play?
The program?
The program.
Yeah.
Another program guy. Set the record for goals for the U17 team last year. Is that right,
sounds
John?
Sounds right. Yeah.
Okay. John's confirmed. That's confirmed.
It sounds right. I don't know if I'd call that confirmed. He said it sounds right. Yeah.
But prolific goal scorer, smaller player, but kind of got, I think some people analogize him to Cole Caulfield.
Okay. Yeah. Let me just summarize he's probably going to go top three in this coming draft, right? Mm-hmm. Along with Macklin Celebrini, who's already at BU. So
yes,
Celebrini's Canadian, actually. But so anyway, that's why this is a big deal with Cole Eisenman kind of decommitting and then going over to BU.
It is interesting. Also, just a reminder that with college hockey, and we've talked about this many times in this podcast before, but getting the top players doesn't always guarantee success just because they tend to be one or two and done when they're really good young players.
Yeah, I think like Will Smith probably will only be there a year.
Yeah, so. I would think so. Yeah, no, it's a very good point. I mean, the Michigan teams over the last couple of years with Matty Beniers and others have just been stacked from top to bottom, and they haven't made it out with a championship yet, at least.
Our next weekly one-timer. Dustin Wolf is expected to be sent to the AHL to start the season, which leaves Dan Vladar and Jacob Markstrom in net for the Calgary Flames. I don't think I'm surprised by that.
Not really, but, you know.
Wolf's knocked on the door.
Yeah, he's done everything he can.
Yeah, he's howling.
He's been awesome.
Right outside in the yard. He's right there.
He's had awesome 2 years in the AHL.
Has he been an AHL goalie of the year twice in a row?
Yeah.
Is that right?
So, but there's really no spot. It's another, you know, maybe Calgary could deal one of their goalies.
Our final weekly one-timer. Just a couple of fun things that we wanted to note. So this goalie, Hunter Virostek of Liberty University, playing against Minot State, made two of the greatest saves that I think we're going to see this season. There was one where the puck was kind of like wrapping around. He was way out of position. He slid backwards and did a full split to put his right leg. So he's facing completely backwards the net, did a full split to put his right skate blade up against the post and make the save with like the back of his pad. And then he kind of spun around and got the other pad down on the ice to stop the rebound. So fantastic save. Go look that up. Liberty University save Hunter Virostek. You can probably find it.
It's so amazing.
Way. Yeah. Crazy save. And then the other one, Sandy the Duck, which is the mascot for Sandy the Gull, right? Sandy the Gull. I really blew that. Sandy the Gull of the AHL San Diego Gulls was visiting the Anaheim Ducks for a Ducks versus Kings game. And the Ducks are coming out on the ice, and Sandy Gull is standing there waving his flag, and he loses his footing and slips and falls. And it's right as I think it's John Gibson is stepping out on the ice, and he just kind of looks at him like, "What are you doing?" and just skates on by. So pretty funny little clip. I absolutely love that. So. Greg Wyshynski had a funny tweet on this. He said, so somebody named Ryan Stahl said, "The Anaheim Ducks are not a real organization," with that video. Greg Wyshynski retweeted it and said, "Look, that is clearly Sandy Gull of the AHL San Diego Gulls. I no sooner judged the Anaheim Ducks for the actions of their minor league mascot than I did the Flames when Scorch killed that firefighter." So remember the the Flames had that weird like fireball mascot. So.
Yeah.
And that brings us to our tweets of the week. I guess that's a pretty nice nice segue away from weekly one-timers. My tweet of the week is from Everything College Hockey. It says, "Colgate women's hockey upsets number 2 Ohio State, and the crowd was loving it." And the entire first row is like 10 dudes in only Speedos. I think it might be the Colgate swim team because it's got like actual Colgate logos on there. On their Speedos, but it just looks really, really funny. The Colgate women's team is celebrating, and they're all banging on the glass, and they have just their Speedos on. So funny, funny tweet. John, your tweet of the week?
I don't have one.
Of course. Curtis, your tweet of the week. I know you come prepared for this. No offense, John.
So friend of the pod, Allison Lucan, says, team heist.
Just friend of the pod.
Well, I thought BFOP. You guys would jump in with the
okay.
She's the
adjective
BFOP,
there.
Yeah.
Okay. She says team heist Darren Von Braun, which is circles us back to the Patreon that led off the show.
Yep.
Check that out on Patreon. Anyway.
So yeah, the context for those that haven't heard it is there was a question in the mailbag asking who would make up our team. I don't know. It was, if we were going to be stealing the Stanley Cup, who would we have on our team? And then John and I drafted like friends of the pod / Kraken people. And my first pick was Allison. So she's,
we're all friends of the pod. Let's be clear here.
That's true. Yeah. She's excited that she's part of my heist team.
I still think I have a better team.
And
depends on what you're looking for. I think
join Patreon, find out.
Yours is more people of action. Mine has a lot of brains. So we're going to really come up
with a charmer.
And a charmer. A lot of brains and a charmer. Charmer being Joey DeCord.
Simmering debate.
Yeah.
So, and then there was a response to Allison's post by Logan Studley, who says, "I can't believe neither of them picked Bowie. which perhaps misunderstood the prompt. I don't think Bowie is a friend of the pod.
No, but it said like friend of the pod, yeah, friends of the pod, or
we would have
Kraken
accepted
people.
We would have accepted it.
Or I guess trolls.
So I suppose just my question at this point is, how do we get Bowie on the podcast when he doesn't speak?
Yeah. Well, he does squeak his nose. So
this needs to happen.
I wonder if we could learn, get him to learn Morse code. Mm. And it would be a terrible, terrible interview though, huh? Like,
yeah.
Tell us about your upbringing. It'd be like squeak, 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 squeak.
Might have to be video content, yeah. I would think. Yeah.
He could
type, maybe. I don't know.
I actually don't know what letters I just spelled out there in Morse code, so I hope it wasn't.
Yeah, tell
offensive.
Us. Right,
yeah, something
let
offensive.
Know.
Yeah. I don't know how to do SOS.
I honestly don't know if Bowie would make a good addition to either of our teams. Seems like he
draw too much attention.
He could go rogue, I think.
I mean, they did that game the other night where they had the little girl with the they gave her the camera and had her try to find him in the crowd, yeah. And she found him right away. So. Mm. I mean, it took, I guess, a little while, but like he was even in disguise,
and
just like sitting in the crowd.
Yeah,
he was
and
pretty stealth, actually.
He was very relatively quickly found by a small child.
So. Maybe not a good addition to a heist team.
But you just got to think outside the box with the heist. I mean, it could be a distraction, right?
Mm-hmm. He could. I will say this tweet is also very funny because it's got a little like GIF or video of the part in Mission Impossible when Tom Cruise is rappelling down in that room that's like super secure. And if he sweats on the floor, it's going to set off and somehow they put Bowie's face on it and it looks really funny. So
yeah, I enjoyed it. Good tweet.
Yeah. Okay, those are our tweets of the week, and that's our episode. Thank you again to Pierre-Edouard Belmar. Thank you again to The Fifth Scallop for the wonderful 5-star review. Thank you to our Patreon starting lineup and to our Patreon members. We really, really appreciate you. And even if you're not a Patreon member, we sure do appreciate you listening as well and sticking with us. For all this time, we love all of you. Subscribe on Spotify, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, subscribe on, what's that one called?
Pocket Cast.
Give it a try. Who knows? If you keep subscribing to a bunch of different places, one of them won't go out of business.
We're out there.
Yep. Leave your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if you haven't already. Stick Taps Andy. We'll talk to y'all very soon for episode 256. Cheers.